It's Sunday Conversations with your host, Michael Soul. Greetings, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, Phenix City, and the entire Tri-City area. Happy Mother's Day, first of all. Before we get Sunday Conversations started, don't let me get too far ahead of myself and say Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers everywhere. Gotta wish my wife, LaTanya, Happy Mother's Day. Gotta wish my mom, Miss Johnny May, a Happy Mother's Day. Gotta wish my mother-in-law, Miss Aretha, a Happy Mother's Day, too. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers around the world. Thank you for tuning in to Sunday Conversations. We have a very important guest on the show today with a familiar name that we all should recognize, Andrea Young. She is the daughter of the late great civil rights leader, former Atlanta Mayor Andrew Young, and Ambassador Andrew Young, a civil rights legend. And she continues to enhance his legacy as the leader of the American Civil Liberties Union of Georgia, the ACLU. Mrs. Young was appointed executive director of the ACLU back in 2017 and continues its work in 2020 as they are now celebrating 100 years. We wanted to talk to Ms. Young about some of the issues that the ACLU is currently working on in relation to health privacy laws and, of course, as we continue to go through the coronavirus pandemic. Ladies and gentlemen, it is not over. Continue to practice safe social distancing. Continue to wash your hands. Continue to wear a mask when you go out in public. And now, without further ado, let's get into our conversation this Sunday on Mother's Day 2020 with Mrs. Andrea Young of the ACLU. Welcome to Sunday Conversations. This is Sunday Conversations, and today we're having a conversation with Andrea Young. She is executive director of the ACLU. Andrea, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing very well. I'm keeping safe, wearing my mask in public, and, observing social distancing.
I'm glad you said that, Andrea, because we are going to continue on all of our stations to continue to encourage our community to wear that mask, regardless of what the governors are saying. And we see across America now, governors are loosening those restrictions.
Yeah, loosening those restrictions, and they're not following the science or even the recommendations of Dr. Fauci.
Right.
And what the president originally said was the correct way to respond. And so that's why we have been, continuously sending letters to the governor, urging him to follow the science, follow good practice, and do the things that are necessary to keep all people in Georgia safe.
As we get into the conversation and talk about that letter and your position as well, first, let's tell our listeners and the community what the ACLU is and what you all do.
Sure. So the ACLU this year will celebrate 100 years. And in Georgia, we have been active for over 60 years. And we are an organization that defends, civil rights and civil liberties for all people. And in Georgia in particular, we've had a special emphasis on voting rights. We also work on criminal justice issues, women's rights issues, and racial justice. So, today and in particular, we have a concern about, racial justice and the impact of COVID-19 on our communities.
And that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. We're on the line with Andrea Young. She is the executive director of the ACLU of Georgia. Okay, Andrea, so the ACLU of Georgia sent a letter to Governor Kemp and Commissioner Toomey asking for information on COVID-19 pandemic as it relates to race and ethnicity. Tell our listeners, first of all, what this letter is about.
So we're asking, a few weeks ago, it came out that something that people really had not projected, that African Americans were actually suffering at higher rates from COVID-19 than other communities. So I can say this again. there are a lot of folks who thought, oh, this is not a black people are not going to get COVID-19.
Right.
And a lot of the initial screening screened us out because you had to say, have you been in contact with someone who was overseas? Have you been in contact with someone who was from China? But, if you were cleaning up behind somebody who had been to China, you might not know that. And so the virus spreading in the African-American communities and in Georgia, according to the current data, about 56% of the deaths from COVID-19 are African-American.
Wow.
And so when this data began to come out, you know, we said, well, we need to, and actually ACLU nationally began to say, this needs to be explicitly tracked. We need a record. We need to put people on notice. We need to ask all of these governors to collect race and ethnicity data on COVID-19 patients. You know, and so that's what we did, is to issue this letter the middle of March, actually asking. We began asking in March for data around COVID-19 and then issued a letter that was specifically geared toward the racial impact of COVID-19.
As we get into more of that information about the demographics, you mentioned something right there. First of all, one of the myths I think that we all heard initially was that, you know, the melanin in our skin is going to protect us from this virus. And I was on Facebook maybe about 2 weeks ago, and a young man was on there saying that the virus was fake. And so he had a bunch of people tuned in. And I inboxed him and said, no, sir, these funerals are not fake.
Yeah.
You know, so
ask the families in Albany. You know, I think if anyone has any doubt, the families in Albany and also in New Orleans.
Right.
You know, there is a crew of African-American men. It's like a Masonic Lodge type of thing. They call the Zulu crew. And they have been severely impacted by COVID-19. And these, you know, these are the anchors of our community, the deacons, the, you know, the bus drivers, the, you know, the anchors of our community. And they have been terribly, terribly affected, and sometimes multiple people in one family.
Again, we are talking with Andrea Young, Executive Director of the ACLU of Georgia. Andrea, why is having the COVID-19 demographic information important?
Well, you know, there's an old saying that says you change what you measure, right? And so if you don't measure the impact in the Black community, you're not going to direct the resources that are needed to protect members of the Black community. And so we want the decision makers to have to be focused and understand the impact that this virus is having in particularly in Georgia, it's African American communities. In some other states, it's also, you know, largely Hispanic. We are seeing an increase in the Hispanic community in places like Hall County, where, you know, the poultry facilities are. There are a lot of the workers in the poultry facilities. And so we are unfortunately seeing that grow in Georgia as well. But especially, African-Americans are being disproportionately affected. And so, you know, we talk a lot about systemic racism, right? Mm-hmm. Structural racism. And if you want to know what structural racism looks like, look at the COVID-19 statistics. That is systemic racism made visible. It is visible because African Americans are exposed to this virus because of the role that we play in this society, and we have fewer access to resources when we are sick. So, for example, when people were told to stay at home, when the stay-at-home orders were issued, there was not, now we have the orders about wear a mask, but initially people were told, people who could stay home were told to stay home. The essential workers, which is who? Your postal workers, your bus drivers, the people who check out, the checkout clerks in the grocery store, the nursing home attendants, the, you know, staff in the hospitals, they can't stay home. And no one said wear a mask to protect those people. Mm. Now, we're hearing that now from Governor Cuomo in New York. He is now saying, when you are in public, wear a mask out of respect for the bus driver who risks their life every day to make sure you can get to work, out of respect for the police officer, out of respect for the person who is checking out your groceries. Respect them. Wear a mask. Your mask protects them. But we didn't hear that for 3 weeks. We didn't hear that initially.
Right.
So our folk were still moving around while the more affluent people who could work from home were safe at home. But our people were out.
Wow. Wow. That gives us some understanding. I'm looking at, as you're talking, I'm looking at a meme picture that I saw earlier today about the transmission probability, too, if we wear masks versus, you know, if we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes from 70% transmission probability all the way down to 1.5% if we're both wearing masks. So you hit
right.
on something
that's,
very important.
That's what I have seen. I think the CDC, and this is what Governor Cuomo says, you know, every day. He says, my mask protects you. Your mask protects me. Because we can't, you can't get a test if you don't have symptoms. We know that it gets so people who think they're not sick can still be spreading the virus. And you can't get a test if even, you know, you can't get a test if you don't have symptoms. I tried the other day. So people without symptoms are not being tested unless they are in very specific circumstances. You know, everyone who works in a nursing home, for example, should be tested, but there are not enough tests for that. Everyone working who's going in and out of a jail or a poultry facility, they should all be tested, but there are not enough tests for that. And that's a whole other discussion. But, you know, we have got to do the things we can do to protect the people that we care about. And wearing a mask is a really important part of that.
Again, our guest on Sunday Conversation, Andrea Young. She is the executive director of the ACLU of Georgia. Andrea, let's clear a word right now, because mm-hmm. when people hear the word disproportionate, I think we don't actually know what that mm-hmm. word means mm-hmm. in our community. Mm-hmm. Help yeah. us understand.
So you would say, so disproportionate is when, you know, something happens greater than you would think. So let's say if there are 10 people in the country and 10 people in Georgia, five of them, three of them are black, three out of 10 are black, which would be the case in Georgia. You would expect then that three out of 10 people, black people would get would be the, you know, people who got COVID, three out of 10 were black. Mm. In fact, five out of 10 are black. And so that's what's disproportionate, is that we are more than half of the COVID-19 cases and deaths in the state, and yet we are only one third of the population.
Right. Again, the ACLU of Georgia on the line with the executive director, Andrea Young. And I'm looking at one of the headlines from the article, ACLU calls on state officials and Bureau of Prisons to collect and release COVID-19 demographic data. With regard to that data, Andrea, is it hard to obtain this demographic data now?
Yes, we have, you know, in March, we issued a letter to the governor to begin to look at these very vulnerable populations. And that, of course, includes, you know, people in our jails and prisons, and probably half the people in our jails have not been convicted. They're there pretrial. So you're talking about people there because they can't afford bail. So we asked for those people's release, and we're actually preparing some litigation to try to get some relief for some of the people whose lives are being at, who are at, whose lives are at risk because they are in our jails, but we want to know what kind of precautions, what actions are being taken to protect people in our jails and prisons who, by definition, can't wear a mask unless it's given to them, can't wash their hands unless they're allowed to, can't socially distance in some of our jails and prisons that are overcrowded. And we know that across the country we're seeing spikes in COVID-19 in jails and prisons around the country. The ACLU brought a lawsuit in Orange County, California. When they first started investigating the Orange County jail, there were less than 20 cases. Now there are 168 known cases of COVID-19 in the Orange County jail. So this virus is very easily transmitted. You put a lot of people in one place, and people are going to get sick.
Mm-mm. Again, our guest on Sunday Conversations, Andrea Young, ACLU of Georgia. She's the executive director. Andrea, I know when it comes to talking about death and dying, I even personally feel some type of way about that. As we look at the disproportionate fatality rates, what are some of the potential causes right now that, as you see it, surrounding COVID-19?
Well, as I said, one of the very disturbing things is that the governors and the CDC were late in calling for wearing masks. So the workers who are dealing with the public, who are essential workers, were not protected. Now you even see that there are people who are defiant and think they shouldn't have to wear a mask. We saw, unfortunately, Vice President Pence modeled that kind of behavior. So one problem is the exposure. Second, Georgia is one of the states that did not take the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. And so you have many people who are working people who can't afford health care. They don't get it at their job. They make too much money for Medicaid, and so they don't have easy access to health care when they do get sick. We also have, you know, there's been a lot of talk about underlying conditions, that if you already have diabetes or some other, high blood pressure, then COVID-19 is more deadly for you. It's a much higher risk if you get it. There are a lot of reasons why our communities have higher rates. Again, it has to do with, systemic racism, the legacy, and the current different treatment that Black people receive when they do go for health care. We've heard too many stories of Black people who died from COVID-19 who went repeatedly for health care and were turned away. And their symptoms were dismissed, or they were taken lightly, they weren't taken seriously, and by the time they presented the classic symptoms, it was too late to help them. So we know that even the healthcare we do get is not the same. We won't get the same intervention, perhaps, that a white person would get. That's just research. That's not my opinion. Right. And so for all of these reasons, it's so important for our community to be very vigilant about protecting one another from this disease. Another reason would be that, often African Americans live in overcrowded housing. We live in multi-generational housing, which is a strength of our community, but at a time like this can mean that some members of the household that are going in and out to work, have to be very careful not to expose, other more vulnerable members of the household. I have this situation in my own family. My daughter is able to work from home, but her husband is an essential worker, and he's not. And so he has to take great precautions when he comes home that, he showers first and all of that before he begins to interact again with the family.
Yeah.
So, our community, we have so many more stresses, so many more risk factors, and, our leaders, and this is why another time I'd like to come on the show is to talk about, we get a chance to vote in November, why it's so important that we vote for people who are going to protect our community, see our community as one that deserves resources and deserves protection.
This conversation is so timely because last week our topic was civic responsibility. And so we talked about the election dates coming up in the primary and local elections, as well as filling out our census. So this conversation is very, very, very timely. Are you getting the sense from the officials that they are going to be forthcoming with the desired information?
Well, we're having difficulty with some of the prison and jail information. Each entity has its own level of responsiveness, and we're continuing to pursue that. I'm part of a coalition of Black leaders that's requesting a meeting with the governor to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on the Black community, and we're pushing for a meeting to talk about these very important issues. There was just a report from the Centers for Disease Control that in Georgia, 83% of the hospitalizations for COVID-19 are African Americans. And so the impact on our community is so severe. And we frankly don't see the response, the emergency response that we would like to see. You know that our mayor, our Atlanta mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, has been on national television talking about how this reopening is so dangerous, you know, for the city of Atlanta. And so for so many of those, the same reasons, you know, would be true for Columbus and Augusta and Savannah. And so many of the mayors are very concerned about the impact of the reopening on our populations, because then our folks are caught up with a choice between, you know, do you go to work when you don't feel it's safe? What kinds of, you know, if you have diabetes, if you're in a vulnerable category, can you refuse to go to work and be able to collect unemployment? You know, these are questions that should be answered, and the governor should be aggressive about about making sure resources are available for people who need to stay home. I mean, he's identified a group that is vulnerable and needs to stay home, and yet what resources are going to be made available to allow them to stay home? And so we have a lot of questions, and we don't see the level of responsiveness. And that's why elections matter. This is an elected official, you know, and elected officials, you know, we elect our officials. And so if they are not meeting our needs, we need to pay attention to that and hold them accountable.
Hold them accountable, indeed. I was looking at an article that said the risk of exposure to COVID-19 in Georgia has increased by more than 40% since the state reopened for business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sends the wrong signal because, you know, there's so many. I mean, I so appreciate you making the opportunity for your listeners, because for so many people, you know, they're busy. They're at work. They don't have time to sit and listen to, you know, to hours and hours of news every day and make an independent judgment. We rely on, you know, our leaders to give us good advice. And in this situation, the governor has taken away the opportunity for the mayor of Columbus, the mayor of Atlanta, the mayor of Augusta. I mean, these are people who would not have lifted the stay-at-home order. But he has preempted them now. You know, he's not allowing them to act on behalf of their constituencies and the people who are closer. He's not listening. The mayor of Atlanta said when he made the decision to lift, he didn't even consult her. And so we just don't see the respect for the people that are, you know, are the mayors. And their judgment and being closest to the people and really seeing firsthand the impact that this is having on communities.
Yeah, I was thrown by that when I heard Mayor Keisha say that as well, that she was unaware and most of the governors were unaware about his decision.
But you were correct me. There is an important primary in June. And, you know, members of the state legislature and, of course, one of the U.S. Senate seats is on the ballot, and it's really, really important. We're also working very hard to make sure people can vote by mail. And so we would encourage people who are concerned about going out to take advantage, you know, of the absentee ballot application that they were mailed, fill it out, and vote by mail.
Andrea Young, she is the executive director of the ACLU of Georgia. One other question as we get ready to wrap the show, Andrea. What precedent factors were already in place that contribute to this, the skewed fatality and infection rates?
Well, I think, you know, for me, one of the really big factors was, the absence of the Medicaid expansion. So what would the Medicaid expansion do for, particularly for rural Georgia and small cities? It would mean that there were more health professionals spread out across the state. We have too many counties that do not have medical infrastructure. Many places don't have hospitals now. Many rural hospitals have closed. If Georgia had accepted the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, we would have a much more robust medical system across our across the rural areas in the state. And that allows you to not only do health care when someone gets sick, but it lets you do the preventative care. It lets you have professionals in your community who can talk about the public health measures that prevent prevent the spread of the virus. And so I think we were very late to educating people about the things that needed to be done to protect people. And also, too many people in our communities were exposed, and the virus was circulating much sooner than we heard. Than we heard from our national leaders. We were not informed at how early the virus was circulating, amongst our communities.
I want to thank you, Andrea, for spending time, and I have to go where I'm going with this next question. For those that don't know you, and now I know a little bit more about you. You are the daughter of the great Andrew Young. I want to thank you, though, for continuing to serve our community and people in general. But what has rubbed off on you from Dad that you carry with you as you go forward to fight the fights that you fight?
Well, thanks for the question. I have to say that, our communities exist because we come from generations of people who fought to build institutions and who fought for justice and who fought for equality. And, you know, my dad is the most famous, but, you know, my mom, my grandparents, you know, were all institution builders who fought to make America a more just society. And so it's just, it's just the way I was brought up. And, you know, having the opportunity to, you know, listen, to be a part of the civil rights movement, to go to freedom schools at Dorchester when in South Georgia when I was just a kid, you know, it's just, you're very much a part of, just a part of how I, you know, of how I see the world, that, you know, we exist to serve. And, you know, we see that where our communities are thriving, there are wonderful people who get up every day and do selfless things to make our communities better. And it can, you know, block by block, church by church, neighborhood by neighborhood, school by school. You know, every one of us who has a meaningful life has been lifted up by dozens, if not hundreds, of people who have built a society that made that life possible. And I think if we all work together towards building that beloved community, then we all thrive, and we can have the America that was promised.
Of course, the gathering, or shall I say gatherings, whether it be West End Mall or Greenbrier or here in Columbus, Carver Park, the gathering of our youth have taken place. If you could talk to our youth right now and our young people right now, what would you say to them about where we are with relation to this coronavirus and COVID-19, and where do we go from here?
Yeah, I think, it is, it's very troubling, and I think I would say, it's very hard, but your life is worth the sacrifice of staying in. You are too important to expose yourself to that risk in that way. Your friends are more important. My mother used to say, you know, when you drive a car, if you don't drive carefully, it's your best friend in the front seat. That's the person who's going to die if you have a bad car accident. So when you run out with your friends and act crazy, you know, you're putting your friends at risk. And this virus is very, very serious. Unfortunately, you know, we have to listen to those who are closest to us, because unfortunately right now, some of our national leaders, I have to say the president does not have our interests at heart. Mm-hmm. And so you have to listen to the people who you know love you and do what they are asking. Listen to the people who care about you. Don't listen to some strange person on Facebook or on Twitter or whatever. Listen to the adults, you know, who put food on your table, who put clothes on your back, who teach you in school. Listen to those people who care about you, who are going to take care of you.
Andrea Young, Executive Director of the ACLU on Sunday Conversations. Andrea, as we close out, let our listeners know how they can get involved with the ACLU and find out more about the organization.
Great. Thank you so much. Yes, we're on, our website is ACLUGA.org. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ACLU of Georgia. And we're constantly, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're constantly putting out new resources. We'll have candidate questionnaires and voter guides as we get closer to the elections. We've got information right now on our website of how to fill out your absentee ballot or how to request your absentee ballot application. And we will continue to do that, not only this year, but, you know, the next, certainly over the next 3 or 4 years. We are committed to making sure every Georgian gets a chance to vote, every Georgian's vote counts the same, and every Georgian can make an informed choice when they cast their ballot.
Andrea, thank you so much. My parting words with everyone now, anywhere I go, is be safe and be blessed. Thank you for being on Sunday Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Sunday Conversations. And remember to tune in next Sunday for another informative show. And again, we say Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers around the world. Let's continue to enjoy this Mother's Day weekend and stay safe, stay healthy. Please continue to wear your mask in public places and continue to practice social distancing and continue to wash your hands. We are not on the other side of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we must remain vigilant. I will say that again. We must remain vigilant. Thank you for listening to Sunday Conversations. Peace and God bless. Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.